Zelda from the very start. I got the heart, it's Mars to play the part.
Down with
Zelda. Peeping through with an overhead view, cause a man's gotta do what a man's gotta do. So I stay on track, collect the fact, never cut the slack, and I always watch my back for Jack.
Down with
Zelda. Don't I stand, I'm the man with the plan, cause the power's in my head and the power's in my hand.
Down with
Zelda.
This week in your parents' basement, we are playing the coming-of-age story about a young elf with a sword. From 1993, we're playing The Legend of Zelda, Link's Awakening by Nintendo for the Game Boy. I'm Steve Greenwell, and with me is the guy who always steals from the item shop. It's Todd Brisket.
What? Zelda? No, my name's Marin.
Good opening dialogue from that game. And our other co-host. This is his favorite Link game involving an ocarina. It's Huell Hauser.
That girl sang her song in front of the egg.
Oh, yes, this is a, you know, it's got dialogue. It's got a lot of dialogue. You can reach us by email at parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes and give us some stars. You can also join our Discord channel by going to ybbpodcast.com/Discord, where you can chat with all the sweet baby boys. And as always, please support the show by using our Amazon click-through link. You can find it right on the YPB homepage, ybbpodcast.com. This week's game is The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. Released in 1993, this game is unique as far as the series goes because it's not actually set in Hyrule. As the game starts, Link is attempting to sail to new countries to hone his sword skills, but he hits a bad storm and wrecks on Koholint Island. According to the old Wikipedia, this game started as an unauthorized side project at Nintendo, and the theme was inspired by Twin Peaks, and you can oddly feel both influences. Todd, you were a Nintendo's kid grown up. Did you have memories of this one?
Ooh, I was a Nintendo kid, and I did have a Game Boy. And I had this game.
This was a huge
game of my youth. This is definitely a game that people like.
True.
Yeah. I think we can say that. Go out on a limb.
Did you like it?
I sure did. I'll go on record saying this is my favorite real life walk 'em up game.
Okay. Ooh. I think I follow what you mean.
Yeah, this is a deep story driven RPG game.
No.
You're
almost right. Almost right.
You level up your hearts, you level up your items.
There
you get
is
a
no
sword
leveling.
Level 2, you level there's your items.
No experience points. There's no skill trees. You simply gain more health as you adventure across Koholint Island.
Mm-hmm. Or Koholint.
Koholint.
Koholint. Koholint.
Koholint.
Yeah, this is, I think this came out the year after, the Super Nintendo. Link to the Past. There we go. Why am I blinking on that one? Mm-hmm. Link to the Past, I've gone on record before. I think many people have said this before. It is probably the best Super Nintendo game of all time.
I think we all hold our hands that it's at least the best Zelda game of all time.
Yeah. The only thing holding...
Which de facto makes it the best Super Nintendo game of all time.
Sure, yeah. I presuppose a thought here. If this game, Link's Awakening, were made on a Super Nintendo using the same technology, this would be the best Zelda game of all time. You got so much going on in this thing. It's not only a Zelda game. It's not even a Zelda game. It's like you go into Mario in this thing.
It's a Link game.
It's a Link game, man. You go into Mario in this thing.
Yeah. There's Goombas in this.
There's Goombas in this bad boy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At certain parts, and when you're wandering around Koholint, it turns into, like, if you'll drop down a hole, it'll turn sideways. It turns into a side scroller.
Yeah,
And this is a game where, as Link, you can pick up an item called Rock's Feather, and it allows you to jump. And so you can jump on those Goombas.
Mm-hmm.
So this one kind of blew my mind as a kid, because even out of that first town, you go into the claw game they have there, and you can play the claw game and pick up a Yoshi doll. So I was like, whoa, this is Mario. He's getting into my Zelda. What's going on here?
That is a nice little, some nice little Easter eggs like that in there. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, Mario himself is almost in this. As Talon.
Is it Marin's dad?
It's weird because she calls him by his name, and not dad. So that relationship is kind of mysterious. But they do seem to have a father-daughter relationship. So it is odd. Because she clearly has the hots for Link. So
yes.
We all know her situation.
Well, I feel like they did borrow from the design of Mario for this one, because, as I mentioned at the top there, the development, this started as like just some kind of side project, and that's why there are like chomps in it from.
Oh yeah, that's Mario the other thing. Yeah,
yeah.
There's the chomps. There's Goombas. They're all sprinkled about. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's mentioned. Like on Wikipedia, it's like, oh yeah, the developer he was into Twin Peaks, and it's like, oh well, yeah, that makes complete sense with the theme and the plot of this one, where it's you know, not to spoil an old Game Boy game here, but if you're listening, you should have already played it. Go play now. Spoilers. So this whole game is a dream.
Not necessarily.
They pulled a Dallas on us.
It is called Link's Awakening, Huel.
However, at the end, if we're going to talk about the end here. So yeah, as Todd hinted, you're Link, you're on a boat, you're traveling around, you crash onto the island. So you're on the island adventuring around, and this owl tells you the only way to leave is to wake up the windfish, which lives in an egg on the highest mountain in the island or whatever. Mm-hmm. So then once you wake the windfish, you get all these warnings that, hey, once this windfish wakes up, this island's gone. It's over.
Yeah.
So you're like, well, I have to leave, but then I'm going to kill everyone on the island? I don't know. So Link, in his selfish ways, ends up waking up the windfish, and then he wakes up in the wreckage of the boat that had previously crashed on the island. So that might lead some people to think it's all a dream. But then a shadow passes over him. He looks above, and the windfish is flying overhead, blocking out the sun, which makes me think it was real the whole time. Why else would there be the windfish flying around? If it was a dream, that makes no sense.
And I did look it up real quick and confirm. So hold your angry emails, people. Talon is indeed Malin's dad, or Marin, as she's also known.
Yes.
And those are folks that have appeared in further games in the Zelda series. So how are they in a dream if they're real, man?
Right.
What? They've appeared in more games?
Yeah. Ocarina of Time, Talon is the in charge of Lon Lon Ranch.
And Marin gives you milk. Or I guess they both do.
Well, you can...
That's not a euphemism. That's not a euphemism. They give you bottles of milk.
Four Swords Adventures, Minish Cap...
Well, no, it's easy to explain that away, is that Link is, throughout the game, he's fighting nightmares of past creatures. Like, the end boss, you fight like a shadow version of Ganon, and a shadow version of that sorcerer guy from Link to the Past, Arngern, whatever his name is.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
So, you could just say that Marin and Taryn are just, you know, oh, they're dream versions of people he knows.
That could make sense if he came from Hyrule. Because the timeline of the Zelda games is all messed
up. Yeah, hold your angry emails, folks. Yeah. I just dug more into the wiki. You know, you'd think, since we are professionals, we read these wikis beforehand. Not during the show. But
It adds Marin, to the charm.
Marin's dad's name's Taren, and they are only in Link's Awakening. Malin and her dad, Talon, are the ones in the other games.
Right. Marin and Taren, exactly. So these are clearly different people mm-hmm. with different lives on a different island that are now dead thanks to Link gathering
yeah, he will, all he the destroyed entrance. He destroyed them and their memories.
He gathered all the Siren's musical instruments mm-hmm. to wake the windfish.
He which, woke them.
The windfish, clearly a whale and not a fish.
Yeah, what's up with that?
That is famously a mammal. The well, wind mammal.
Whales are famously mammals, yes.
Famous.
Well, you know, this is...
TMZ told me.
Well, this is happening in Hyrule, and so we don't know how their animals work, like maybe their whales are fish. So,
Got a point there. They do have fish people, so they might have fish whales as well.
Ooh, let's not go down this rabbit hole of
yeah, it would make sense.
And also, I'm looking at the Zelda wiki, because of course there's one. And her titles are Songstress of Koalint Island and Dreamer Girl and Dream Girl.
Ooh.
Whose titles?
Marin.
Oh, okay.
Marin's titles, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Dream Girl from Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition.
Oh, well, if that's not canon, nothing is.
It is not canon. Hyrule Warriors is not canon.
That's what I... Well, okay. Yeah, I guess I didn't say that.
I did. Since we're talking about it now, let me just say... So this game takes place in the decline of Hyrule timeline. Basically, the idea is that Ocarina of Time's ending split the Zelda's world into three timelines. The Decline, the Twilight Realm, and a New World. The Decline timeline has all of the best games. Link's Awakening, A Link to the Past, and Zelda's 1 and 2. So, Breath of the Wild is undetermined yet where it is in the old canon there.
Yeah, so, it's really...
In which one did they not elect Trump?
I don't know. He does have a resemblance slightly to Ganon. So,
he gets elected in all three.
We're definitely in the decline timeline right now. So,
well, not to go on too much of a tangent, but Breath of the Wild is so separate from the others that I don't know how the hell it would fit in anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I still need to play that joint.
It's fantastic.
Mm. Well, like most of these games, like I don't know, there was a lot of obsessing over the timeline for a long time. Where really it's like it doesn't matter except for Zelda 1 and 2. 2 is a direct sequel to 1. And then this game seems like a pretty clear sequel to the third game, to Link to the Past. Because you're fighting nightmares of enemies you just fought in Link to the Past. So so that would kind of make sense.
And then Majora's Mask is the direct sequel to Ocarina of Time. Like, there's clear, like, pairings, but then putting them all in order just never made sense. And people that try to do it, I'm like, just stop. Just have fun, please. Just anyone.
Yeah, come on, guys. It's an anthology series.
Yeah, and they've kind of just settled it by... It seems like games with a similar kind of theme or look to them are kind of grouped together.
Right.
So the Twilight Realm is Majora's Mask, Twilight Princess, Four Swords Adventure. And then it's called A New World is Wind Waker, Phantom Hourglass, and Spirit Tracks.
Where does Skyward Sword fit in?
Skyward Sword is technically the very first game. It's before everything.
I think so, yeah.
It goes
I think Wind Waker is like the last, because everything got flooded.
Wind Waker is it's in the New World timeline, so like after Ocarina of Time.
Line.
It basically goes.
Todd, what timeline is this?
How many timelines are we in?
Are we?
It's here? Yeah, here the full timeline: Skyward Sword, Minish Cap, Four Swords, Ocarina, and then it splits into three. So
those are just random words. What are you even saying, man? What's going on here?
And decline is where it's as if you lose in Ocarina, which I. It seems odd to me that they have a timeline that assumes that you lost in that game, but Twilight Realm is if you is as if it's the world in where Link young Link goes forward, and the other one is old Link. Dag, wake up!
Oh,
but yeah, this is I don't know. It is kind of like it an answer to a question that only 10 people were asking. Sorry.
Yeah, for me, for my, not, for
I'm
me,
not
for
fun
mine.
Of you, I'm making fun of everyone else that tried to make sense of any of this.
Yes,
I never really played a game past the old Wind Waker. That's kind of where I fell off. I want to get some of those handhelds, those newer handheld Zeldas, and play them. But I just never have, because you know, hey, I'm a modern day PC gamer. All my the best games on PC cost $5 on a sale. But whenever I look out for one of those old Zelda games on a handheld, like Minish Cap or something like that, it's like $20 new, and they don't sell it any other way.
Well, there's probably used ones.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no used ones for cheaper.
Oh no! Well, this is Nintendo, so any Nintendo developed game, as we've gotten into, like, yeah, they'll get the half price, but they never get to like $5 really.
Mm. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, like I sold my copy of a Smash Brothers for the Wii the other year, and I still got $40 for it.
Whoa.
So
I got some games to sell.
And by the way, I also realized looking at this list, I was like, oh my god, there's a lot of Zelda games now. There's 17 of them. So,
mm-hmm. A lot of the Game Boy ones I never got into. So maybe we should get back to Link's Awakening. This is a game I played as a Ute. I had this game for the Game Boy, the OG Game Boy.
That's and surprising.
It's one that I never finished. Why is it surprising? Because it's good.
Yeah.
So it's a game I never finished, and I find this, and I think I might not be alone here. Hopefully not. One of the more difficult Zelda games, because
yeah,
they cram a lot into that Game Boy. So I don't know if that means they
fill that port up.
Yeah, they fill that slot, that cartridge slot, and they say, we have to put so much content in here, we can't explain a lot. So
it does get very confusing at the end.
There's no room. There's no room for text. Yeah,
I had to consult a few guides to beat it.
So they have the owl who serves as your guide that says, "All right, you did this. Now just go here." Mm-hmm. But I found myself like having to go back to the library in the village and look up that map to be like, "All right, he told me where to go, but I don't know like really where to go."
Yeah.
So you have to look up the map in the village to be like, okay, it's this square that I got to get to eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little tedious. And it's just, even the first dungeon in most Zelda games is kind of like a, okay, it's not that hard. Yeah, it's a warm up. But the first one in this one's kind of hard. Like, it's not impossible, but for a first dungeon in a Zelda game, it's a little difficult. So yeah, I found that as a Ute, I remember this being like, oh, this is the hard Zelda game. Like, I don't know if I can beat this. And that's before I had really played Link to the Past. I'd only really played the N64 ones.
Oh,
maybe dabbled.
We played it in reverse order
in the NES ones.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've stuck in no order playing these Zelda games. I played a lot of them, but in no particular order.
Well, this one definitely goes back to the NES Zeldas, kind of just threw you in there, and then like you got to a certain point and then it's like, well, where do I go? Whereas,
but that's kind of a sign of the era, though.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is. But the Super Nintendo one, like, it was much clearer where you had to go. I think it even marked on your map, like where things were and that kind of thing, which was a big help. So then it's weird to come back to this one, and it's you do have to like trial and error your way through a lot of it, or you had a subscription to Nintendo Power like I did, and then so I did beat this one as a youth.
Okay,
so
that's cool.
Well, is this one of the first games? Did you own it as a kid or what?
It's weird. I was trying to think of how I had played and beaten this one because I don't think I ever owned it. I think what went on was my friend Brian had a copy.
Oh, Brian.
So I played his copy because I would just go over his house after school and play video games. And he would play video games too. It was great. So I think I would play this while he played like something on the TV. Then we would also play like two player games too, like Smash TV and NBA Jam and stuff like that. But sometimes you just want to play some games by yourself with someone else in the room.
I mean, you got your time in on it as a kid, so I think I can classify this as one that we all have experience with, which is rare.
That's true.
Because Huel is notoriously the Sega kid on the block.
Well, I was NES, then Sega, then N64, so I had that SNES. I had that SNES gap, but that entire time I had a Game Boy. So I could play all the bad licensed Game Boy games like Crash Test Dummies or the 7-Up game.
Oh, my God.
There is a dot. I don't know if I even mentioned this when we did. What was it called?
Cool Spot.
There was a Cool Spot Game Boy game. But it was like a puzzle game. It was really dumb. Like dumber than the other one. It made no sense. It had no connection to anything.
I just love when we casually mention a licensed game as like some piece of crap we would never play. And then you're like, oh yeah, I had that one.
Yeah. That's something I owned.
Yeah.
The game was Cool Spot.
Yeah. You know, Home Alone was no Cool Spot or Shaq Fu, but it was definitely better than Home Improvement.
Oh man. I did not own Home Alone. Please don't inform the listeners that might have happened.
Not even for the Game Boy?
No. But I do suggest go back and listen to that episode because it was great.
It was Christmas
2016? I don't know.
Well, Link's Awakening is a good game.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's a great game. So I don't know. I feel like I don't have as much to say about it. It sold 3.8 million copies, which puts it number 15 all time for Game Boy. So surprisingly, this list has Game Boy Color games in
here. Did you say 15?
15th.
Okay.
1-5.
That seems pretty low in the ranks.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages sold better.
Are those on Game Boy Advance?
Game Boy Color.
Oh, they were? Huh.
So, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you can, like, every game above it on this list is made by Nintendo or Rare. So, that's kind of telling you what it's up against.
That makes sense.
Actually, every one of them was published by Nintendo. So, you get your Tetris, a couple Pokemon games, couple Marios. You got Dr. Mario.
Dr. Mario.
You got a friend of the show, Pippin's favorite game, Kirby's Dream Land.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just a bunch of those games. The first non-Nintendo game is apparently Konami released a Yu-Gi-Oh game in 2000.
Mm.
So that is your first one. The
famous Pokemon ripoff.
Yes. And then Dragon Warrior Monsters is number 22. So
great.
Yeah. Nintendo really dominated the hell out of the Game Boy publishing.
Game Boy.
So the Home Alone episode, I just looked it up just to because I was curious myself. December 21st, 2015, episode 34.
Oh, boy. That is early.
Yeah.
Ooh. I was off by a year.
Yeah.
Where does Alfred Chicken rank on that best-selling Game Boy games list?
It's got to be way up there, right?
At least top 90.
You know, I'm not seeing it on here for some reason. It must
help me find my girlfriend. Help me find the watering cans. That's a clue, kids. The watering cans.
Oh my god!
Oh
how
god!
How many bodies? How many bodies are
frightening?
By Alfred Chicken.
There is one other little indie joint that we have covered on this show, and that is DuckTales.
Oh
yeah.
That comes in at number
Capcom indie joint.
Yep, number 41 on this list with 1.4 million copies. Hmm. And also, probably just because the Game Boy was seemingly out for about 27 years, there are 53 games on this list that sold at least a million copies. So that is a lot of games. So
sure is.
But, no, I can see why Nintendo dominates this list. Link's Awakening is just, it is crammed full of stuff. Like things to explore, and the combat's good.
Yeah,
and it's
there's Link, side quests.
Yeah, Link can jump in this game. It's nice.
I was about to say that before you started talking about how many games Wario's Fart Palace sold. But last week we had a game where you could not jump.
Mm-hmm.
And then this week we have a game where you can jump in a game series where you usually can't jump. So we're in some kind of weird, weird world.
You're blowing my mind, man.
The games that we've been covering. So yes, with the rock's feather, Link can jump over stuff.
Yes.
Which is mind-blowing.
Yeah, it is weird how much this changes the game dynamic.
Right. You're like, oh, there's a pit there where I would normally die. And like 10 minutes in, you're like, oh, I can just jump over these now. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, because it is like the first item you get in the game.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Well, not the very first. You get like your
it's the first
your
dungeon
shield.
Item.
You get your sword first.
Yeah, you get
you
your
get shield first, Todd.
And you get your boomerang. The rock's feather, it adds a whole new dimension to this Zelda series. This is the first three-dimensional Zelda game.
In a way, yeah, because of those weird dungeons that you go into, the dungeons underneath the dungeons, or when you drop below the earth or whatever, where it becomes a side-scroller. So yeah, this is the first 3D triple-dimension Zelda game. It's a good point.
Yeah.
Because you can jump.
Can you jump in Breath of the Wild even?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
You can jump and climb, yeah.
Oh, it's good that we can.
It did take a while for 3D Zelda games to allow you to jump also. Because in games like Ocarina and even Twilight Princess, you jump automatically. Like if you run towards an edge, you'll just jump forward.
Mm-hmm.
Or off of things.
Yeah, they need to stop holding hands of the players.
Well, kind of. But it was never meant to be a platformer. Yeah. It's an adventure game.
Mm. Yeah, this is a really good game. I was having fond memories as I played it again this week.
Yeah. Yeah, I never really remembered where I got left off. When I was younger, probably like the third dungeon or something, I probably just got confused.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one it's a rare occasion that I actually want to go through and finish playing a game that we covered during playing it. I thought I was going to do that with Secret of Mana, but that was like 2.5 years ago, and I still haven't picked it back up. So this might be the one. Like a man.
See, I feel like Secret of Mana, if the re-release that just came out wasn't so bad, maybe that could have been it. Or if you get a, like, they should just put it on PS4 and enable you to play like online with friends.
As like a
rousing good time.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Sure.
And it feels like you should be able to technically do that nowadays. Like you can play the Simpsons arcade game online. So I feel like Secret of Mana, you could do that. Huel, what do you think of the music in this one?
It's good. I mean, it's kind of standard Zelda fare. Nothing mind blowing. It's good.
Yeah, bleeps and bloops.
Yeah.
So
I mean, they get a lot out of the Game Boy. Like this.
I think
this is a full fledged Zelda game. Like, there's no corners cut on this one.
Right. The Game Boy music, I think, they're able to squeeze a little bit more out of those square curves. You know. The bleeps and the bloops.
Yeah.
They're able to squeeze more music out of a Game Boy than a Nintendo NES.
I think
just overall, I think that Game Boy music is a little superior to the Nintendo NES.
The Nintendo NES, yes.
I think it just sounds better because it's closer to you. Like, it's right near your face when you're playing.
That makes no sense.
It's right near your ear canals.
So when you go to a concert, you're like, this sounds horrible. Because the speakers are so far away?
Well, a concert is just too loud.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. I forgot.
Yeah, listen, I'm a wizened old man now. I have no interest in these concerts.
I don't disagree. I just don't understand your closer to the face makes it better point.
Well, it's just closer to your ears.
Yeah. Okay.
But
this is why the Genesis had the best music because it had that audio jack on the front you can plug in.
Oh, with like headphones?
Yeah, get some headphones.
That's a good point. I thought that was just so your parents didn't yell at you. Turn that damn video game off.
I can hear the blast processing from the kitchen.
I don't care if it do what Nintendo don't. Turn it down.
So I already mostly talked about where it is now. There was a Game Boy Color update in 1998. It adds a few extra things like color. But it's basically the same wonderful game. So
it adds one more dungeon to the game.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
There's 9 instruments?
There's no instrument in that one. It's just a little bonus romp you can go through.
Oh.
Yeah.
What a travesty.
I think it's one of those classic things where if you do it, you get an item that helps you beat a game that you could have easily beaten anyway.
So, one of the classic useless, well, not useless, but unnecessary Zelda items.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Din's Fire.
I just, the Final Fantasy games have a bunch of those too, where it's like, oh, if you beat this optional boss at the end, it gives you this awesome item that you in no way needed to beat the game, because the optional boss is way harder than anything else in the actual game. So.
Well, it's just funny because the items in Zelda are so integral to how you proceed, and like they each build off each other, and like you need this to go here and you get that to go there. And there's always one or two that have no significance to anything. Just like, did they just need to fill the screen up with stuff on the item screen? Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah, the cane of Bryna and the bombs from Link to the Past, I think, is the one exactly. that those two.
It's yeah. like, I'm already so strong, I don't need to blow stuff up anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, it's I just don't need this ever.
Yeah. Oh, I did forget to look up what the for every Zelda game, there is like a the end boss can be beat with like one of the crap items.
Yeah, and this one is so the end boss in this game, it's a multi-stage boss fight. He goes through different phases, but the last phase is the Death Eye. Death, D-E-T-H, capital I, which is a giant eyeball with two eyeball stalks. And you can one-hit kill eyeballs. This guy with a boomerang.
Really?
If his eyeballs open, hit him with the boomerang, and he dies instantly.
That is fun.
Oh, nice. The boomerang, that's... The boomerang, oddly, in this game, like, really messes stuff up. Like, it's like a viable weapon.
Yeah, a lot of the times it, or some of the later games at least, it's more of a stun weapon.
Yeah,
it's not going to actually stunner, kill things.
Or you can collect some rupees or hearts in the distance.
Right. Before you get the long shot. But, or the hook shot or whatever. Yeah, but yeah, I guess grabber. In the early ones, yeah, the grappler. In the early ones, it's more of a, it's still like an attack kind of weapon.
Hmm. Yeah, and I don't know, I just remember in Link to the Past, like, you can beat the, one of the end bosses with the butterfly net. So, that was always one of my favorite little Easter eggs.
Oh, you mean the giant butterfly?
No, the sorcerer guy whose name I have no clue how to pronounce. It's like Arnigan. He's the one you beat before you go into the dark world.
Right. So. The false boss.
Yes, yes.
Herzog 2.
Precisely.
speaking of some of our great features, Huel, did you manage to get a look at the manual for this one?
I got many a look at the manual, and this may surprise you for a Nintendo published game, but it's pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
You got the story in the beginning with some artwork. You got artwork a link throughout. He's running, he's jumping, he's blocking stuff with his shield. Runs down the items. There's a lot of items in this. As you would suspect. You got the keys, you got dungeon keys, you got all the instruments you gotta collect. Talks about the phone booth that you can use on the island, which we didn't even mention. It talks about the owl guy. So it's got all the marks, it's got all the check boxes. It just gets a little too detailed about like some of the stuff you can do, so it gets a little wordy. That's really the only knock I can give it. Maybe the layout's a little strange. It's a little too blocky, like a little too much going on. But I mean, this has everything you want. So I got to give this 4.5 out of 5 Mario 2s.
Ooh,
nice. That's about what I expected. This was a heavy manual read for me.
Yeah, it's not perfect, but it's close.
I always, you know, whenever my Game Boy ran out of batteries, I'd pick up the manual and flip through it just because I liked all the artwork in it.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's good. There's a lot. It's very detailed and a lot of artwork, like you said, not just screenshots, but like drawings.
Yes, nice drawings.
Absolutely. Okay.
Well, just quickly along manual. Lines in a way. Nintendo Power issue 50 is a big blowout on Link's Awakening. Ooh. which is also partly why I was able to beat this game, which I mentioned previously. But it's also a cool cover. It's got the owl in front of the Master Sword on the cover. So,
ooh, nice.
Yep,
yeah, that owl. One of them, the owl is very mysterious. Sorry.
One of them classic covers.
That's great.
For at least by their standards. So there's another feature we do regularly Todd, would you like to tell us about the DuckTales scale?
Sure. The DuckTales scale has two primary factors, those being nostalgia and replayability. And guys, it's no surprise here. High nostalgia for this one. I put my time in on this Zelda as a kid. This is a game I loved, and it's from a series I love. So high nostalgia. Even thinking about the manual, I'm feeling nostalgia. Ooh. So high there. Replayability. It's a Zelda game. You know, you get what you get when you replay it. It's not going to blow your mind through a replay, but there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of side quests. They have that item fetching quest that you might not have done. You know, there's other things you can do in this game. It's a fun little romp. And plus, because it's a game you can play as you walk about, that adds some replayability there. You don't have to sit behind the TV. Yeah. You can take it with you on that road trip.
A real life walk 'em up, I believe.
Real life walk 'em up. Mm-hmm. And so those two factors being accounted for, I would clock Link's Awakening in at a 0.98 DuckTales.
Oh man.
Oh.
Ooh, that's way higher than I thought.
Oh, Huel, yeah, I could tell you were too low the second I
looked. I said 0.82.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew nostalgia was high, but keep in mind there are two primary factors. So I thought replayability would be a little low.
If you account for the fact that you don't have a Game Boy handy anymore, it kind of cuts down on how easily it is to replay. But yeah, as a game, I think this is pretty dang replayable. Mm-hmm. Super Nintendo and Links to the Past on that one. I'll just pop that one on every once in a while just because I like to go through the intro of the game for a spell. And I would do the same if it were as easily playable for Link's Awakening.
Mm-hmm. Well, your solution is you need to get yourself a Super Game Boy.
Yeah, I had one. I don't know where it is. I have my Link's Awakening cartridge. I have a Super Nintendo, but I don't know where my Super Game Boy went.
If only I'd know. I sold my Super Game Boy cart because I didn't have any Game Boy games left that I actually like to play. So, unfortunate.
Hmm.
So I have a regular feature. Do it from time to time on here. It is called the Herzog Gradation.
Hmm.
And it's number from 1 to 10. And this one is our first Herzog Zen.
Ooh,
that sounds good.
10.
Ah, 10.
The highest amount of Herzogs.
Yes.
So many Herzogs. How can I hold all these Herzogs?
How can I hold them? Herzog Zane. Zane is what you want to say.
I think I know how to pronounce my own scale, Huel.
Okay. Yeah. Mark Schnell meet the art things, huh?
Yeah, I forgot we had an intro clip for this. I don't think we played it last week.
I forgot too. But yeah. So this is a really splendid game. And Todd, I think you had some even more reasons why this was a splendid game, right?
Sure, yeah. I think we all agree this is a splendid jam, as they say on the streets. But I do have three reasons why Link's Awakening for the Game Boy is the most best game of all time. And they're pretty short, so it's okay to go through three of them. I mean, we want to get word out on the streets to all the folks that this is indeed a good game. All right, the first one is titled I Love Zelda, and it's by an anonymous reviewer in June of 2002. And they wrote, Zelda games are so cool, it is the best game I ever played in my entire life. My other Zelda game got stolen, but I look forward to being responsible this time if I get it. 5 stars.
Hmm. Okay. I look forward to being responsible.
Yep.
Forward.
All right. next one is titled, Old School Game, Still a Great Classic. And it's by Sonic, written in April of 2012. and Sonic wrote, Old School Game, I had it forever. No collection is complete without it. I may go play it here in a minute. Actually, no, but it was a great game. I enjoyed it. Still working on Oracle of Ages. Too fun. Zelda had lots of puzzles and mazes. 5 stars.
Okay.
All right. The next one is
really got into their mind in that one.
The next one is titled "Still Learning," and it's by M. L. Hetton, 1960, and it was written in July of 2015. And M. L. Hetton wrote, "I'm still learning how to play the game system. I don't know which buttons do what, and I'm not very coordinated with my hands. I used to play this on regular Nintendo, and I loved it. 5 stars."
Okay.
On regular Nintendo?
Yeah.
I guess they mean with a controller and not a Game Boy?
Hmm. They must add Super Game Boy, or they're just talking about the first game.
I think they're talking about just the first one.
Ah. Mistaken.
Still 2 buttons, so you should be okay there. M. Hitton 55 or whatever.
ML Hitton 1960.
1960. Yeah, it makes me think he's an older fellow. Maybe a little confused about those games on video. But he's sticking with it.
Yeah.
He's giving it his shot.
He was 33 years old when this game came out.
Yeah.
I'm older than that now.
This was written in, what, 2002 or something?
2015.
Oh my. Okay. So now, he's like 60, 50.
So this is like when you, in a couple decades, Huel, when you are in your 50s, your 60s, you're going back trying to figure out how to play that Bayonetta on PlayStation.
Yeah, but I'd probably be, if I had even wanted to play it, I'd be playing it now.
Well,
I don't think there is any analogy for this. This is like if in my 60s or mid-50s I decide to go outside and try to play a sport. Something I'm not doing now. Like, I can't figure this out. That's the way you gotta go. Not something I'm already doing. Something I've never done and never will.
Like, learn how to love.
Open my icy heart. Hug a child.
not punch bums in the face.
Right. Not steal tip jars from convenience stores. Yeah, so great segment.
This talk just reminded me of our old dear departed friend Scooter Butt 42.
Oh, the memories come back sometimes.
Yeah, up there in heaven, chasing the ice cream truck with Jacuzzi Pete.
No, they would never hang out.
Todd, was there anything else you want to add about the old Legend of Zelda's Link's Awakening?
I don't know. I just had a note here that one of my favorite enemies in this game is the circular guys that have the card suits on them. Let me scroll through this list of enemies to see if I can find what their name was. Three of a kind.
That was tough.
And they have the card suits that cycle on their chest. And when you hit them, the card suit pauses, and you have to hit all of them so that they stop on the same card suit. Otherwise, they come back to life. I like that. That was a lot of fun for me as a kid. It's like a little timing puzzle inside of an adventure, deep story-driven RPG game.
Yeah.
And, you know, speaking of enemies, there are a lot of good enemy names in this thing. I don't know if do we have time to run through a few?
Just a few. Hit the highlights.
I'll hit the high notes. We got we got a crow. Darknut, of course, an all-time great classic Zelda enemy. Darknut with a great
Darknut.
Name.
Darknut. Okay. Right.
Cuke Man, who's a cucumber.
You sure you're pronouncing that correctly?
Wow.
Might be something else.
Monkey, Moblin, Mutt, Pig Warrior. Of course, you got your Tech Tights and those fellas. Anti-Kirby. He's like Kirby.
Anti-Kirby?
But he's not. Bone Putter, Boo Buddy, Bone Camo Putter. Goblin. Pol's Voice. That's one of the all-time great enemy names in Zelda.
Pol's Voice?
Pol's Voice. Pol's Voice, yeah.
Like Rolls Royce, but with a Pol's Voice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And getting down into the bosses.
Well, Pol's Voice is the rabbit-looking things, aren't they?
Yes, the rabbit-looking thing. And on the original Zelda, if you're playing the Famicom version, I think we mentioned this before. The second controller has a microphone in it, and how you beat that enemy is you yell into the microphone on the second player's controller, and that stuns him, and then you attack him. But us here in good old God's America don't have that microphone, so I don't remember. Did we have to do anything special? I think you just hit him, and he dies.
Yeah, you can. They die from one arrow, whereas I think you can use your sword, but the sword doesn't work as well.
Yeah, so the bosses in this one, we have King Moblin, Lan Mola, Armos Knight, Turtle Rock, Rolling Bones, Hinox, Dodongo Snakes, Master Stalfos, Goma, Smasher, Grim Creeper, and Blano.
Grim Moldor.
Moldo, Genie, we didn't really get into the bosses too much, but Genie is a great boss in his other game. He's a genie that lives in a bottle, and he comes out and attacks you, but he has to go back into his bottle to recharge. But what is Link of Zelda known for? Throwing bottles. So you pick up his bottle and toss that thing at a wall.
That's what you get.
Great little twist. We got Slimeye, Anglerfish, Slime Eel, Facade, which is a face on a wall, Evil Eagle, Hothead, and then just the Shadow Nightmares, which are shadows, which are boring.
Surprising range and amount of baddies for a Game Boy game.
Good range.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Frank Thomas Baseball, which came out years after this one, every player looks the same. So
gray blob. Yep.
Very well done, game.
Although Frank Thomas's
motion capture,
yes, hyper realistic motion capture,
just like the majors.
Well, Huel, was there anything else you wanted to say about this one?
Oh, not really. Maybe one day they'll return to Coco Lint Island, but for now we'll have to accept it as a one-off adventure for our pal Link.
Maybe he'll dream about it again someday.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, let's move along to the email portion of the show. Todd, did you receive any emails?
How about let's move to the voicemail portion, which is more interesting than the emails.
Oh, we got a voicemail. It's
also, yes, next on the agenda.
Yeah, we got a voicemail. And from this voicemail somebody left us, they left the note that came in the email. They dropped it to parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, yeah.
Drop your voicemails there. The note, all it says is congratulations on 100 episodes.
And, oh,
let me play this voicemail. Here it is.
I've been waiting for you, friends. Man committed a sin, disturbing the life cycle of nature. The original sin that man is responsible to protect the life cycle. I have made a creature to rule over mankind. This is the final battle. Show yourself, our new ruler, the Emperor.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, no question. I guess that's, he just wanted to get a statement out there.
Right. Well, thank you for the congratulations.
Yeah.
Not sure what that has to do with what we just heard. Yeah. But.
Didn't leave a name. Was that Captain Tennille?
not going by the email address. It's not. I don't know.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Hmm.
What was that email address? Or do they want to remain anonymous? That's another segment.
It's anonymous email, yeah.
Okay, that's different. Okay.
Yeah. We don't want to put these emails out there. They'll just get spammed.
Get on blast.
get the email inbox on blast.
Hmm, okay.
Huh. Well, that was... Yeah, they didn't really have a question, so we... I guess we just have to soak that one in. Just take it.
Just gave them that soapbox that they were looking for.
Yeah. Well, we can do emails for real now. Todd, did you receive any emails?
Oh, I did get an email. And the email I got says this. Dear YPB, which Sonic the Hedgehog is better? Old school, 91 to 97, or new school, post-Sonic Adventure / 1998? I like both the old and new school Sonic games, but I prefer the new school Sonic. He just looks cooler with green eyes, and the newer games have eye-popping levels and 3D effects. But to each his own, I guess. What about you, Mike from Bakersfield?
Just like how normal his name is. That's very unusual for anyone who writes into our show.
Anyone that has any interest.
Yeah, Mike.
Oh, okay.
From Bakersfield.
Well, I didn't know eye color changed for Sonic.
I think he used to just have black dots eyes. Soulless right. Black Soul, yes. Dots.
Shark eyes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would just have to say the old ones, because I think those are the only ones I played, so I've not played any more recent ones. So an old school
I can't
Sonic.
Really tell if he is asking about the games or just Sonic himself, which is better.
Oh, that's a good point.
Which Sonic the Hedgehog is better.
I guess still gotta say the old one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going old one. I don't like any of the new designs.
Well, I enjoy pixel art myself, but I do also appreciate the way they made him more adult in the newer games.
It catches your interest.
They fleshed him out.
Mm. You've been Google imaging for Sonic?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some Tails action too. That Knuckles.
Yeah. You know why they call him Tails, don't you?
Knuckles deep.
why do they call him Tails?
Exactly.
Yeah, it speaks for itself.
Well, Huel, did you get any mails this week?
There's an email I got that I will read now. Dear YPB, I loved all your talk about the grablin hook last week. I love when anyone uses a grablin hook. Being able to grabble onto things is so fun and convenient. It helps you get around or reach things far away. I hope you cover another game with a grablin hook this week. If you could add a grablin hook to any video game, what would it be? And that's from Bruce W. at WayneEnterprises.net.
Yeah. No. Oh.
Well, that's interesting, because the other big grappling hook game I know, besides Link to the Past, is also Batman for the NES. I believe that has a grappling hook.
That one is real good grappling in the NES Batman.
Yeah.
Well, NES or even the current ones, the Arkham
series. Oh, yeah, the current Arkham games. That's a...
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do anything if you don't use that grappling hook.
Got to grapple.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what that has to do with Bruce W. at WayneEnterprises.net, but, I mean, it's a good thought to have.
Yes, yes. But the question was, what would we add a grappling hook to?
Yeah.
Well, my answer, like many of these emails that we get, is Fallout.
Oh, just, that's not bad.
I would like a grappling hook in that one, and then I can just go anywhere.
That's a good one. Swang around that open wasteland.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm assuming Breath of the Wild, do you get a grappling hook in that one?
I don't think you do, actually.
Oh, because I would think a grappling hook would be useful in that game as well.
I think because there's such an emphasis on climbing, they didn't give you a grappling hook. But I'll tell you right now, I don't remember.
If there is one. I feel like if you would remember if it was a significant part of the gameplay.
I don't think it is.
Like Link to the Past, I remember that grappling hook because that is a good grappling hook.
Well, yeah, like I said, it's important. But that's kind of the thing about Breath of the Wild. The items are used in very different ways than what you're used to in Zelda games. And I will leave it at that.
Multi-purpose.
Nah.
Well, my answer is obvious. And if you haven't sussed it out by now, you're no fan of this show, shut this iPod off, throw your phone in the trash. Because the answer has to be Moonwalker for the Sega Genesis. Think about pulling off combos, grabbing up to the ceiling, swinging across, doing a moonwalk when you land.
Moonwalk in the air, yeah. Backwards.
Grabbing that kid out of the closet, saving him.
Grabbing those women, throwing them to the ground.
Yeah.
When I first heard you, I thought your answer was going to be Crusader Kings 2.
What game is that?
Krukai 2.
Krukai 2?
Krukai 2?
Yeah,
Krukai 2, the greatest indie joint of all time. It won indie darling of the century a few months ago.
The century? Yeah. A few months ago in the teepees?
Yep.
Indie game of the century?
Yeah. Imagine how many more cousins you could get your paws on with a grappling hook.
True. It's not a bad point. Use it to negotiate, grab treaties out of people's hands.
Yeah. give me that Caius belly right now. You know what would be good is if you could grapple, if you're on the map having to wage a war in Krukai 2, and you can, your army has a grappling, and you grabble an army that's on the other side of a border. They can't run away from you. Pull them right to you.
There you go.
Kill them. Kill them on the spot.
Grapple them over here.
Oh, we have fun. So I didn't get any emails. I have two short new news items. First is there's a Morrowind expansion. They're still expanding Morrowind, apparently. Yes, it is 17 years in development now. It has come out before now. But
well, it's not like a mod. It's a legitimate expansion.
Oh, wait. No, it's a mod. Sorry.
Oh, Steve.
It's a mod, but it basically, I think it triples the size of the game. So
yeah, they open up the rest of Tamriel over there. You can go, I think you can saunter over into Skyrim and adjacent areas.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's out. If you're still deep into Morrowind, which apparently came out in 2002, first go instead just buy Skyrim. But yeah, after that, go get the mod.
It's about $3 now for Skyrim, so just play that.
It's available on every conceivable platform. And the other item is that there is now a book about Huellhauser, the one in California. I'm sorry to say, though. Sorry.
You mean the one buried in California?
So, it's by a guy named Duran.
Duran?
Duran?
D-U-R.
Is that like a World of Warcraft character?
It's called Louis. Take a look at this. My time. by Louis Forte, as told to David Duran.
Oh, okay. So he's like a ghostwriter.
So, yes, yes.
Should be called like That's Amazing or something.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe they can slap that on for the paperback edition.
Yeah, or that could be the subtitle. Louis, look at this. That's amazing.
The Life and Times of Fuel Hauser, California Gold.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So, you know, get it through Amazon for Christmas.
Click through.
Mm-hmm. But that's all I had. Todd, did you have any asks this week?
Yeah, I got a quick one. Let's just postpone it. I think we haven't done it in a few weeks, so we gotta help somebody.
Please.
Mm-hmm. I got a quick one here. So let us ask the Sweet Boys. And send all your life questions into parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com, and we will keep your questions anonymous. And this is from an anonymous, and they wrote, why are skinny celeb women and explicit women who are skinny or thin seen as attractive? I am a skinny woman with some, quote, curves, but even I find that skinny women just look funny. No offense. I find my elf laughing at Pika, Angelina Jolie, or whatever the latest sexiest woman is, quote, looking sexy.
That's the end?
Oh,
that's the ask. Yeah.
Oh. just kind of stopped there, didn't she? So
I think she got her point across.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, my first assumption here, and it's a terrible assumption to make in the year 2018 in the society we're in, but perhaps you're heterosexual and aren't attracted to women, so you really have no grounds here to judge any of them.
Yeah.
You gotta look inward first before you look outward.
Mm-hmm. Look at the beauty on the inside.
Yeah. Think about all those children that Angelina Jolie adopts. I mean, that's hot in its own way. She's helping. She's helping people, like Princess Diana, volunteering. The sexiest woman to ever live.
The one she looks.
Yeah, it's neck and neck between.
Got tea for that one.
Princess Diana and Marina Baccarin.
Yeah. It's a photo finish with those two.
It's almost the same lady, except one is blonde and one is brunette. So,
mm-hmm. But the charity work is what puts one clear above the other.
And I'm talking
about Marina Baccarin. The charity of unleashing those hoots.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say let Nathan Fillion just chew up all that scenery.
That's true. She's done a lot of good work.
None left for her. So. Oh.
Yep. Yeah, so I guess we helped her. Maybe try dudes.
Yeah. If you don't look like looking at ladies, try looking at dudes instead.
Yeah, just another option.
Yeah. That works for whatever gender you are.
Right.
Yeah, we don't judge here.
So,
look at what you look at. And if you don't like it, look at something else.
That's the YPB promise.
Yeah. Hey, if you don't like girls or guys, maybe look at a bandicoot or two.
So, yeah. I do not recommend that.
do not Google image search for that ever.
You may awaken something.
Well, Todd, was there anything else you wanted to say before we signed off here?
Sure. I am forever in your debt for getting my leaves back.
Oh. Huel, anything else you wanted to say?
Crackle, whoosh, you're finished.
And on that note, here's a little snifferoo from next week's game.
There's been a kidnapping. It's Rachel, the daughter of the president of Cercia. Get into the castle and rescue Rachel. Sometime, somewhere, someone is plotting a government overthrow. A small republic is in danger. It's time for the one-man army. Richard Miller. She must be dead by now.
Don't come!
Rachel McPherson. Oh.
Since you have traveled so very far, be my guest and let me entertain you.
Sherry Delgado. Just to be sure. Wild Dog. Time Crisis.
Your father will pay the price for destroying the Imperial rule.